Hello, everyone, and welcome to the FortCast, the official podcast of Fort Healthcare. I'm your host, Dr. Michael Anderson, ENT physician and president and CEO of Fort Healthcare. I'm very excited today. My guest is Dr. Matt Bliss, one of our orthopedic surgeons, and we're going to be talking about carpal tunnel syndrome. So, Dr. Bliss, thank you for being on. I've been with the organization roughly 20 years. Maybe a little bit more now, but the years just don't count after a certain amount. So I'd really appreciate if you could introduce yourselves to our listeners and maybe tell us a little bit about yourself and how long you've been with Fort Healthcare.
Sure. Well, good morning, Mike. Thank you for having me on board, and it's an honor to be here on this podcast. So I'm Dr. Matt Bliss. I've been with Fort Healthcare here now for just over 5 years, started back in 2018. I've been an orthopedically trained hand surgeon since 2003, so my practice is focused mainly in treating disorders of the upper extremity, shoulder to fingertip, be it bone problems, nerve problems, tendon problems, etc. So I'm part of the orthopedic team here with Dr. Schuppner and Dr. Zambrano. We provide a full array of orthopedic treatments and some pretty cutting-edge things that we do. So that's me in a nutshell.
Well, thank you for that. That was a wonderful introduction. Specifically speaking, with you being a hand specialist, Dr. Bliss, we hear a lot about carpal tunnel. It seems to be a very common entity. And I'm just wondering, how common is it? How often do you see it? And what maybe are the top causes of it?
So carpal tunnel syndrome, of all the things that we see in orthopedics, is probably the most well covered in the lay press. You read about it, you hear about it, it's on the internet, so it's out there. I think there's a lot of misinformation in regard to carpal tunnel syndrome. So I will give you my brief synopsis. Carpal tunnel syndrome is quite common. Some of the more recent studies show that the prevalence in any population is about 4 to 5%. So 4 to 5 people out of 100 at any one time are suffering from carpal tunnel syndrome. So it's quite common. It's part of the human condition. The real question is, what exactly is carpal tunnel syndrome? And to put it in a nutshell, carpal tunnel syndrome is a pinched nerve. This is a pinch at the wrist area that causes classically numbness, tingling, discomfort in the hand and the fingers. The median nerve is the nerve that is getting pinched. It's getting pinched as it passes through a passageway in the wrist referred to as the carpal tunnel. That carpal tunnel is bordered on three sides by your wrist bones and on the top by a very thick ligament called your transverse carpal ligament. When the nerve passes through that carpal tunnel, it then branches and it gives you your sensory or your feeling in your thumb, your index, your middle, and half of your ring finger. So it lets you know that the knife is sharp, the stove is hot, or your finger is positioned correctly on the keyboard. When that nerve gets pinched or compressed, the small nerve fibers stop sending signals from your fingertips to your brain. And your brain interprets that as numbness or tingling. So this can be classically exacerbated by certain activities, people who do mountain biking or people who drive a lot, anybody that uses vibratory equipment such as a jackhammer or other machines can experience this. Most classically, when people have carpal tunnel syndrome and they come to me, their complaint is not so much, my hand is numb and tingly. Their complaint is, hey, doctor, I cannot sleep. Carpal tunnel syndrome tends to be worse at night for a couple reasons. One, our hands swell. And two, we tend to sleep with our wrists bent. Both of these things increase the pressure on that nerve, and it causes people to wake up multiple times during the night, feeling like they have to shake their hands out or even run them underwater to get the feeling back. Well, anybody who has experienced broken sleep knows how miserable that can be. So that's oftentimes the reason people will come to see me, is because they can't sleep or their husband or wife is making them come in, because they can't sleep either. So that's what carpal tunnel syndrome is. It's primarily a genetic issue. It can be related to obesity, other different medical conditions, thyroid disease, and diabetes. One of the common misconceptions I end up explaining a lot to people is there's a very low correlation between repetitive motion and carpal tunnel syndrome. So people who use a mouse or use a computer throughout the day, that is not necessarily a significant risk factor for carpal tunnel syndrome. So that, I think, is something that's probably not elucidated in the press very well.
So Dr. Bliss, if somebody is having these symptoms, the numbness and tingling in, sounds like, a few of their fingers in their hand, they probably proceed to see their primary care provider, physician. And at that point, are treatments tried before the patient gets to you? Or do a lot of patients just directly reach out to their orthopedic provider to get to be seen? And what sort of treatments would be available in the primary care setting for carpal tunnel?
I think there's probably a mix of patients. I think some people feel comfortable bringing these issues to their primary and seeking their advice. Other people, I feel, have a more a la carte approach to their healthcare and are a little bit more involved, and they feel they have a hand issue. They want to see the hand doctor. So I'd say it's probably half and half, people who will come to see me directly versus people who are referred by their primary care physicians. The primary care physicians, they do have some tools in their toolbox to treat carpal tunnel. First is just optimizing the patient's overall health, making sure that their thyroid is functioning correctly, making sure that their diabetes is under control, in addition to managing their weight. Beyond that, probably the first line in the treatment of carpal tunnel syndrome is giving the patient a splint to wear at night. And these are pretty simple splints that keeps the wrist from being flexed or bent and can really improve the patient's symptoms, at least at night. So splinting, sometimes people can try anti-inflammatories such as ibuprofen or naproxen, but these can have mixed results.
And I think you just mentioning the splinting, it kind of resonates with the impact on sleep that it has not only on the patient, but also a patient's loved one. And I imagine if the splint doesn't work and that sleep disruption continues, that's when we start to consider other measures, other treatments.
That is correct. In addition, oftentimes people will have symptoms during the day and will feel like they're losing their fine motor. They have difficult times buttoning their shirt or performing their job duties when their hands are numb. So that's another reason people will come in, other than the nocturnal symptoms.
So when conservative measures have failed, when the splinting has failed or anti-inflammatories have failed, I know a lot of people consider surgical options. So could you tell us a little bit more about that, Dr. Bliss, the surgical options for carpal tunnel, and how successful are they?
There's kind of a middle ground between the splints and surgery, and that would be a cortisone injection into the carpal canal. And that can be indicated in people who are symptomatic but are not interested in surgery. Cortisone is an anti-inflammatory, so it tends to treat inflammation of the tendons that accompany that median nerve and can help reduce the pressure on the nerve. The injections themselves are not necessarily the most enjoyable thing. They can be quite painful. And cortisone is, by its nature, a temporary effect. So it does have a place for people who want a permanent solution to their carpal tunnel syndrome. We then discuss surgical options.
Okay, so Dr. Bliss, if the cortisone injection either just doesn't give that long-lasting effect or patients are looking for a more permanent solution, that's when surgery is considered. So if you could please just tell us a little bit more about the surgical aspect of carpal tunnel syndrome.
So oftentimes we do get to the point where the patient is interested in having a carpal tunnel surgery, and this is what we refer to as a carpal tunnel release. Carpal tunnel release surgery is one of the, if not the most common surgeries done in the United States. So it's very common. A lot of research has been done on it. It has evolved over the years. Originally in the 1950s, when George Phalen brought it into popularity, it was a inpatient procedure. People would stay overnight, a large incision, quite a recovery. our surgical techniques have improved today, and now your choices really are to have the carpal tunnel released done through either a small open incision or done what we refer to as endoscopically with a telescope and a small surgical knife. My preference is to perform the surgery through a small open incision, approximately 1.5 centimeters in length, located in the base of the palm. Surgery is relatively simple. It basically involves opening up the roof of the carpal tunnel by incising or cutting that transverse carpal ligament. People often ask, well, what's the effect on my hand function if that ligament's been cut? And what we know very well is that there is little to no functional impairment with that ligament cut. So the surgery itself takes 8 to 10 minutes. After the surgery, people usually have 3 to 4 small stitches in the skin and just a soft dressing. The stitches stay in for about 2 weeks, and people can be fully recovered at the 3 to 4 week point, depending on their job demands and duties. It is a highly successful surgery with about a 95% success and patient satisfaction rate.
Well, it sounds like it's fairly minimally invasive. I mean, a 1.5 centimeter incision, that's about a half of an inch. That's a really small incision, very efficient surgery, 8 to 10 minutes. There aren't many surgeries that fall under that category. And it sounds like the recovery is pretty smooth for patients. Are there typical work restrictions after the surgery?
Yes, it's a pretty quick and efficient surgery. I tell everybody, hey, you're going to have stitches in your palm for a couple weeks. You can use your hand for light indoor activities, so eating, getting dressed, using a computer, the next day after your surgery. I don't want you getting your hands wet. I don't want you swimming in the lake or digging in the garden, chopping wood, that kind of thing, for a couple weeks. Those are the restrictions that we usually look at. So it's the people who make a living with their hands, our carpenters, our bricklayers, our diesel mechanics, that are limited more than other people. If you're an office worker, people are often back to work within 1 to 2 days.
I had no idea they got back that quickly in the office. What about pickleball? Pickleball seems to be picking up in America. Any pickleball restrictions? My neighbors play pickleball, so we're talking about this all the time. I don't play pickleball. Do you?
I do not, but let me tell you, Mike, I have had numerous discussions and very, very stern discussions about when people can get back to their pickleball. They love their pickleball. I try to be realistic. I tell them, listen, you're not going to have any restrictions after 2 weeks. So technically, you could get back to pickleball in 2 weeks, but your palm's still going to be sore. It's a sensitive area. So you may have some scar tenderness. So I would ballpark it at maybe 4 to 6 weeks before you're doing racket sports, because that just puts pressure right on that incision.
That's good to know, because I was just thinking, you know, with a paddle or, you know, similar to a golf club, it's probably very similar restrictions. You just, bottom line, it's a highly successful surgery, but you just have to let it heal too. You can't rush it.
Correct. Yeah, there are very minimal complications to the surgery, but it does take some time to heal. Patience is not a strong suit in a lot of Americans, and I'm one of them. I'm an impatient person, so I totally understand that. But I think a lot of people are very glad they had it done, particularly when it comes to the quality of their sleep. And I've had countless people say, gee, I wish I had just gotten it done sooner and not put up with these symptoms for 2 years. So that's always gratifying.
Yeah. And on that note, if you or one of your loved ones has carpal tunnel symptoms, please make an appointment with your primary care physician or provider or with your local orthopedic surgeon. Dr. Bliss has just done a wonderful job serving our community here in Jefferson County. And Dr. Bliss, I want to thank you for being on today's podcast. Thank you. The Fortcast is always very appreciative to all of our guests. So thank you.
You are very welcome. It's an honor. I feel like a celebrity, and I'm going to tell my kids I'm famous now.
Well, I appreciate that. I appreciate that. So thank you, everyone, for joining us for this episode on the Fortcast. If you found this podcast helpful, please share it on your social channels and check our full podcast library on our website, for further listening topics. Thank you and have a great day.